You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hello, Motor City! Welcome to the Daily Detroit Happy Hour Podcast. I am your host, Sven Gustafson. So excited today because this is a real novelty. We're coming to you from the brand new Podcast Detroit Satellite Studio. It's in Southwest Detroit. Let me just christen the place real quick. I got a bottle of champagne that I brought in. There, good. Now it's officially a podcast studio. So like I said, proud to say that the Daily Detroit Happy Hour, we're the virgin podcast to be cut here in this studio. Formerly, this building was a Detroit Police Precinct headquarters. In fact, I'm told this studio is the location of the old drunk tank for the precinct. Somehow that's just so appropriate for the theme of our show. This place is still kind of in disarray, like the after effects of a long night of partying. In fact, Dave Phillips, who is our guest audio engineer today, he's from IT in the D. Dave, has the paint even dried on the place yet or what?
It's the right now it's the Millennium Falcon of studios.
There we go.
You know,
yeah,
it may not be pretty, but it's, you know, she's got it where it counts, kid.
But of course, the reason we're all here, ladies and gentlemen, is to hear about what's going on in downtown Detroit. The place is in the midst of an incredible transformation. Our guest today is Eric Larson. Eric's the CEO of the Downtown Detroit Partnership, which is pulling the strings on a lot of the things that are underway downtown, have already happened, and have yet to see the light of day. Eric, welcome to the Daily Detroit Happy Hour podcast. So nice to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad you clarified who the virgin was in this room. So, it's great to be here, and I can't thank you guys enough for what you're doing, because quite frankly, this is an opportunity to dive into some, you know, lots of very interesting topics and really get to the meat of it. And being here in the new studio and being the first of the podcast to come out of it,
what an honor.
Is quite an honor. It is a badge of honor that I'll wear for a long time. So thanks for having me.
Yes, you will. You can pick up your stripe for your lapel on the way out.
Yep. Okay. After I come down from the paint fumes.
Absolutely. All right. So I mean, anybody who has been around Detroit long enough knows that downtown is in the midst of, you know, incredible transformation. You think back 10, 15 years ago, downtown had some serious dead zones. But nowadays, you know, the streets are alive with people, new businesses opening all the time. Lots of buildings that have been mothballed for years, decades even, you know, seeing renovation, being put to new uses. Really exciting time. Eric, you've been CEO of the Downtown Detroit Partnership since 2014. Let's start off let me ask you to just sort of describe the DDP, what it does, because I think it's one of those groups that I think people probably know more about what you do than the fact that there actually is an organization called the Downtown Detroit Partnership.
Yeah, I think, and that's a great point. I think, you know, we tend to be sometimes our own worst enemy because we just go about doing, you know, the day-to-day business of stewarding the city forward, and that means, you know, doing not only some really important planning work to think about how we're making sure that the city, as it grows and as you said, you know, becomes quite frankly much more dense and much more intense in terms of its level of activity, mm-hmm. you know, that it really is ready to accept that. But also, quite frankly, taking a city that was designed for 2 million people and starting to really adjust it to one, a lesser density population, but also more importantly, the 21st century sort of ways that we're living and interacting within our city. So the Downtown Detroit Partnership really sort of breaks down into a couple different ways. One, we are sort of that wise, stable parent for various things that are coming up out
for the rambunctious toddler.
For the rambunctious toddler, yeah. Like the Build Institute, which is a neighbor of yours from across the street from the studio, and things like DXF, which is our tour and visitor component of the Downtown Detroit Partnership, and then even as new of programs as MOGO, the new Detroit Bike Share. Those are all affiliates of DDP that mm-hmm. we help, you know, nurture and grow. And then there's the core business of the clean, safe, and inviting activities that our business improvement zone does and that our planning efforts through the public spaces like Campus Martius Park, Cadillac Square, Grand Circus, and Capitol Park. And every day, as you said, there's something new in the city. And it's not just happening in the downtown. It's happening throughout the city. But we really have tried to use the downtown as that, you know, quite frankly, as that case study. So if it works downtown, we really try and make sure that it's replicable in other areas, not only of other areas of the city, but, you know, quite frankly, a lot of the public space activation and placemaking activities that we've been doing now for over 20 years, you know, are being done all over the country and have become sort of the, you know, the buzz, you know, sort of approaches for really, continuing to turn around urban centers.
If I'm not mistaken, the DDP really kind of has its origins back in the last decade when the Super Bowl came to town, and it was kind of Roger Penske and getting things tidied up and cleaned.
That's right. I mean, the Downtown Partnership actually has been around for just under 100 years.
Oh, okay.
It goes all the way back to what was a membership organization, the Central Business District Association, that the first, you know, effort was to light the Ambassador Bridge.
Oh, wow.
Back then, Detroit was sort of the Paris of the Midwest, if you remember, and Paris is known for as the City of Lights, and
yep.
So we were trying to replicate some of that. And so, while I wasn't there, I know you're looking at me like I'm pretty old, but while I wasn't there, the reality is this organization has been around the city and been trying to do things for a very long time. But you're right, most recently, starting with the Super Bowl and starting with the Lower Woodward Initiative, there was a real push to take this organization and make it less a membership organization, because the membership component of what we do is still very important, but also really create a leadership component. And so it now is the C-suite level sort of stewardship of the city. So we have the top representation from both the private, public, and philanthropic sectors on our board that are thinking about what is really the right thing to do next for the city. And the Super Bowl was one of those. Roger Penske was our chair and was really, the force behind getting the Fords and the NFL to think about bringing the Super Bowl to town. And a lot of clever things were done in the city, because we really, as you said, we weren't quite there yet. A lot of the buildings were still were vacant. A lot of the storefronts at street level were really, pretty derelict and abandoned. And so, we started, doing things as simple as painting, storefronts, plywooding storefronts, putting interesting murals on storefronts so that it appeared there was more activity and livelihood than there really necessarily was. But equally as important, there was a strategy to put together a fund and start acquiring buildings. And quite frankly, what you see now in the core downtown on Woodward, our main street, is a lot of buildings that have been reactivated because 20 years ago, not almost, there was a focused approach to buy those buildings and then start to get them in the hands of people that would actually redevelop them, as opposed to landlords that were just sitting on them.
Mm-hmm. So does the DDP sort of have a, circumscribed, you talk about the Central Business District. I mean, how do you define that? And are you limited to there? Because I heard you talk about how, you test things and see if they're replicable in other parts of the city.
Yeah. So, we define our geography as expressway to expressway and then river to, basically 75. It expanded a little bit because of the new district.
District Detroit,
which has sort of bridged the midtown downtown borders. While we stay within that 1.1 square mile of the core downtown, which is, in many cities would be considered sort of the financial district, but it's the core business, address of the city. While we stay, primarily within those boundaries, the reality is we are constantly working with our neighbors. Sumozy is a absolute partner.
Midtown Detroit.
Midtown Detroit is an absolute partner of ours at DDP, as is Josh Elling. There isn't an organization in the city that we don't embrace and try and work with. And so – for instance, our clean efforts, where you see ambassadors on the street in bright yellow T-shirts, those are employed by the Downtown Detroit Partnership. It's an incredible program and partnership with Goodwill Industries. So we're bringing returning citizens and people that have had barriers to entry in terms of job opportunities, you know, to the city. And the intent isn't necessarily that all of them necessarily land at DDP and in the clean efforts and stay. Mm-hmm. The intent is really to get them reemerged in the workforce and then grow from there into other opportunities. And so it's a feeder system as much as it is a real service that is augmenting the kinds of services that cities would normally do, like the clean and safety. But those services are provided on a contract basis throughout the city. So mm-hmm. we provide contract services to Midtown. We provide contract services to Corktown, to Jefferson East. But then we also have, obviously, the core services in the downtown. So a little bit of both. Most okay. of our focus, is downtown. And we're very careful not to to step on our neighbors' toes. But at the same time, we think there's, you know, the reality is in a city like Detroit, there's more than enough need. We've had more need than there's been sort of capacity to address for a long time.
Sure.
And in the past, we tried to do this scattergun approach. You know, we tried to take care of all of Detroit's problems at once. And finally, I think we're at a point, and part of it is the leadership that started at the state and clearly is in the mayor's office. We are now finally sort of focusing on specific issues, trying to remedy those issues, and then moving on to the next issue. We just don't have enough. You know, we don't have enough capital resource. We don't have enough human resource to address everything at once. And everything needs to be addressed eventually. Mm-hmm. But we've got to be more logical about the way we do it. And I think we're doing that better.
So the Downtown Detroit Partnership recently issued its 2016 Downtown Detroit Perceptions report, which was based on a survey of about 4,000 people. And had a lot of interesting feedback in it, a lot of, I think, positive things. You know, high marks for downtown Detroit has a lot of potential. Healthy downtown is important to the region. Measurements on safety and transit and everything. Sort of what's your takeaway from the survey? I mean, there's a lot of positives, like I said, but maybe some areas for opportunity too.
Well, that's the whole point. And quite frankly, it's sort of funny that, we call it a perception survey because, perception obviously is 99% of reality. But we're hoping that, what we are tracking is as much reality as it is perception. And, you were kind enough to actually take the survey. So, I want to know whether the low scores on mobility are all being driven by your responses or by somebody else's. But no, the reality is we continue to move up, which I think is really important. Mm-hmm. If we don't track this stuff and we don't have sort of consistency in the data points that mm-hmm. we're tracking, it's really hard to know whether we're making progress. And so
this is the second third perception survey.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because this started back in 2010 with a group of sort of like-minded and interested organizations, DDP being the convener of those, mm-hmm. In this 7.2-mile report that Hudson Weber funded. And that was the same kind of data collection, broad in terms of – so it wasn't just about perceptions of survey of safety and mobility and so forth, but it also was really focused
population data and stuff.
Yeah, population, rent data.
I know you had Kurt
Metzger
kind of
help
with that one. Yep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so then they redid it in 2014. And so the funding stopped and interest sort of changed. And so we decided we needed to pick that up and make sure that we were continuing to track, whether we were moving forward or backwards and where we were moving forward and where mm-hmm. we needed some more help. And so to your point, 93% of the people that are surveyed, and it's up a couple percentage points, but really continue to feel Detroit is a inviting, safe, good place to visit. But on the flip side, for instance, very low marks. 30% of the people think that the city is really safe for bike usage.
Right.
Even lower scores for, the ability to effectively use the bus systems. So what that tells us is, and what that helps guide us is, where do we need to continue to invest, the time and the dollars and the thoughts, not to take our foot off the pedal on making sure that it continues to be the perception and the reality of inviting and safety and all that kind of stuff is still good. So mm-hmm. We got to keep on the things that we've been successful with, but we've got a lot of things that we can continue to work on.
You've got it dialed into the Daily Detroit Happy Hour podcast. We are talking with Eric Larson, CEO of the Downtown Detroit Partnership, and we're talking about their brand new Downtown Detroit Perceptions Report. It's based on survey data from 2016. So I'm just curious, there was about 4,000 respondents. About 70% of them were white versus 22% black, and 65% lived outside of the city. How was the survey distributed? How did you?
So that's one of the tricks, and quite frankly, this is doing the podcast, is really helpful to as you said earlier on in our conversation, to help people understand what DDP is really trying to do, because we are often not as forward and boastful as we should be, because we really just go about our business every day. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, we get that survey out to as many people in as broad and as diverse a way as we can. But it's only as good as those that actually and two, actually do something with it. So we get it out to the neighborhood organizations, we get it out to the church organizations, we get it out to all the major employers. We get it through the city's the city manager, district managers. We get it out through them, and then we also obviously try and spread it into the suburbs as well, because as much of what we're focused on is how are we dealing with the people that are living and working here, we also need to be focused on those that are visiting and playing here. And so every year we do a little bit more. We work with a number of the nonprofits to get the survey out, but we're always open to new ideas as to how to continue to broaden mm-hmm. the coverage, because while it's statistically relevant, mm-hmm. Both in terms of the diversity as well as the pool, mm-hmm. We as a city, quite frankly, as a community, not to get too deep in the weeds here, we really need to continue to work on making sure that we're hearing all the voices.
Right. I mean, I've mentioned the kind of racial demographic breakdown, because it's 70% white versus 22% black. It's almost
a reverse of
what the city population looks like, which is kind of interesting. But I mean, there's also been a lot made of downtown being. You read about this all the time, that downtown looks a lot whiter and more affluent than the city at large.
No, I think that's right. And I think that, one of the things that we need to be understanding is the downtown it's the city's downtown. It's not, the reverse. And so the things that we need to continue to focus on are the ways that we're being equitable, inclusive. What are the activities that we're designing, we're programming, that we're, producing, especially in the public spaces, which are city-owned public spaces that are really making sure that they're embracing people from all walks of life. But the reality is, a good portion of the activity that takes place in the core is different than the activity that takes place in Midtown or in, quite frankly, a Live 6 neighborhood, or because so much of the activity is driven by the corporate community. It is our business destination in our district, and it also happens to be the largest concentration of our entertainment. And so by virtue, the polling is going to be, is going to reflect a different mm-hmm. constituency, a broad constituency, than the city makeup. And I think that's important to recognize. It doesn't mean that, any race or religion, religious affiliation is any less important. The reality is Detroit is that downtown Detroit has a different level of participation than other areas within the city.
Right. So I want to talk about transportation options, because I think that's a really important part of kind of the mix and where downtown is going. And you mentioned specifically kind of the low marks for the city's bus system, how easy it is to find information, how easy it is to use it. So let's start on buses. I mean, what do you take away from that finding about buses? I mean, there has been some writing that there have actually been some pretty significant improvements in bus service, both at, you know, between DDOT and SMART.
Yeah, we just had a stakeholder meeting, which, you know, we've got this annual – two annual stakeholder meetings, one earlier in the year in the spring and one in the fall. And the spring meeting is now always a conversation with the mayor. So I have a conversation with the mayor, and besides him calling me out for not wearing a helmet when I'm riding Mogo, which now we're going to, you know, send him his own personal helmet because I'm not sure that he wears one either. The reality was we were talking about mobility, and we were talking about the importance of the Q line and what M1 as a new form of transportation represents. And he was quick to point out that while the Q line is very important and it's a demonstration that we're moving into the future relative to mobility, it still has its challenges. And the smart DDOT riders have learned that, you know, if you're waiting for the Q line and it's taking too long, you can jump on DDOT and it's actually a little more efficient. And, you know, there was just obviously a six reporter study or test of the different mobilities downtown. They did Uber, they did their own car, they did Mogo, they walked and they bussed and Q-Line. And I'm happy to say Mogo was the second fastest, but the bus was very, very strong. And so you're right. There's been a number of things that have been improved in terms of DDOT's delivery of services, but we got to think about some things. We have bus lines on almost every major thoroughfare in the city. I don't know that that really makes sense. I think we've come a long way from thinking that we have to have the bus be exactly, you know, as close to the person. Mogo, for instance, is a wonderful last mile solution. So you can get to a bus stop and then pick up a different form of transportation to get to you know, that last segment of your commute. I also think that, you know, with the Q line, more and more of the demand of where the ridership is, and quite frankly, the parking, which is another huge issue in downtown, is managed, can be spread, and so we start to use that better. But at the end of the day, we have to have a regional transit solution. It was very unfortunate that last year that the RTA didn't pass. I think we've got a couple years before another shot at it will take place, but I think it will, you know, they'll bring that back. And we've got to coordinate. We've got to do a better job, you know, and it is a lot better. I give both the county leadership as well as the mayor's leadership credit, but SMART and DDOT are doing a lot better in coordinating their services. I ride the Reflex, for instance, from Birmingham, Michigan downtown, and it is an incredibly efficient way to get, you know, into the city. But we've got to continue to build on those kinds of partnerships. We got to get, you know, quite frankly, we've got to get rider passes that work on all the systems as opposed to independent systems.
Agreed.
I mean, it's absolutely crazy. So
You mentioned the Regional Transit Authority, the ballot proposal that was narrowly defeated last November. How involved was DDP in that issue? I mean, did you work mostly behind the scenes? You're essentially a member organization, you know, with a lot of different stakeholders and everything. So there's probably some diversity of opinion, I would imagine, maybe.
Yeah, I think on that one, I think there was, especially in Detroit, there was a pretty unified and common view that it was it needed to happen and it was a positive. It was really, you know, the challenges that ended up, you know, being put forth in terms of, you know, Oakland County and Macomb, where there was not quite as much understanding and buy-in. And part of that is because their population is obviously more, you know, spread.
Yeah.
And so the idea of, you know, the effectiveness of using that to get to, you know, job employment centers and so forth was different. But, you know, so from DDP, We were very, very engaged. You know, I was on the steering committee that was leading the effort with a lot of the other leadership throughout the region, not just throughout downtown. Our board makeup, which is a 52-member board, and as we said earlier, it represents, you know, the C-suite sort of leadership in all these major organizations, was very, very involved, not only involved in terms of time and insight, but also financial support. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I think it got down to a very, very strong – I mean, it was a couple things. One is we had a very strange political, you know, national presidential election that I think did actually impact this to some extent. And I also think that the grassroots effort in the suburban communities was more effective than I think was appreciated.
On the anti side.
Yes. And so there was a great media campaign that was radio, television, and so forth for RTA. Mm-hmm. What wasn't as strong was the feet on the streets kind of campaign, mm-hmm. and that's where the against did a really, really good job, especially in the suburbs.
Right. So one key difference, you know, we were talking about the perception survey earlier. One key difference, and you asked about, you know, how excited you are, and people said, oh, you know, generally the high marks for I'm excited to ride the Q line hadn't launched yet when this survey was given. Q line's been up now for since
May.
You know, it's still free thanks to the grant from
Kresge.
Yep. And I mean, what are you seeing from the Q line? What's your take on, you know, it's still early. Obviously, it's you know, probably too early to render a full judgment and everything. You mentioned that there are still problems, especially with weights. Those have been kind of well documented. But what's your takeaway so far, and what do you think it suggests about you know, the path forward for regional transit?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know whether this is a cop out or not, but I really was less expecting the Q line to be the salvation of our mass transit, mm-hmm. you know, problems in the city, and that's where I think a lot of people sort of default to when they want to talk about the negative is, you know, oh, it didn't fix everything, and it doesn't function as well as it should be. The reality is, it still is a confined, you know, circulator system because it isn't, you know, it is 3.5 miles each way.
Right.
And for me, and I think for those that really supported it, it was more about demonstrating that Detroit was no longer just about cars. You know, that we really were going to start to look at technologies, you know, mass transit technologies that were more prevalent in other parts of the country and other parts of the world. And start to build a really truly regional system. And a regional system can't be just by, you know, rubber tire buses circulating. You start to have to get, you know, some fixed rail kinds of solutions to this that then, quite frankly, mm-hmm. you know, that tie into other fixed rail like Amtrak, and you really start to actually connect. I mean, if you look at the Eastern Seaboard, you know, actually either of the coasts, but, you know, Eastern Seaboard, you can get up and down the Eastern Seaboard of our country by rail. There is no reason with the right-of-ways in the rail network that we have that we shouldn't be building on that, and in order to be competitive, we need to. So for me, M1 was as much about you know, a mindset and changing that mindset than it was that it was going to be effective. Now, having said that, you know, I ride M1. I see the actual operation reports every week. You know, the ridership is very strong. The wait to the head times, which is what they call the time between trains, mm-hmm. You know, continue to reduce. You know, for a while they were 20 to 25 minutes. That's far too long. You know, we had a lot of education that needed to take place, you know, in terms of the interaction between cars on the road and the train.
Sure, it's a learning process.
And the streetcar. We have queuing into garages that was blocking, you know, the tracks and things like that. So there was an education process. And quite frankly, by, you know, as you said, by the generosity of Kresge, This has provided not only a continued opportunity for people to test it, try it, and for free, but it also gives us a little more time this summer when there's a lot of activity downtown. I mean, this is when all the activity is with the sports and Tigers and everything else, as well as a lot of construction that ultimately will be wrapping up along the main spine of Woodward. To wrap up and for us to sort of continue to work the rust off of a new system.
Yeah.
So I'm very encouraged with the early results and I'm more encouraged with the fact that people recognize the importance of this kind of a system and there's talk about expanding it.
Do you think DDP will help that push to expand the queue line further north?
Absolutely. DDP will be very engaged and very supportive of continuing to find ways to move it north, as well as, quite frankly, east and west on the inverted T. The next logical thing is to take it, up and down Jefferson. We've got to find a connection, a much more consistent connection to the airport, in order to really function as a healthy region, and move people around in that region, and really become a destination city. We fixed Cobo Hall. The authority and the improvements to Cobo have really made it a national, no longer just a regional sort of exhibit set space. It's a national, convention center now. But, you go to Vegas, you can ride the train in. You go to Miami, you can ride the train in. I mean, we've got to get to a point.
Chicago, it's like $70 car ride or something. Yeah.
Right. So all of those things, I think, need to be addressed, and DDP fully intends to be part of those conversations.
You're listening to the Daily Detroit Happy Hour podcast. We're talking with Eric Larson of the Downtown Detroit Partnership all about some of the exciting changes. We've been talking about transportation options downtown. The DDP has been a big backer of the new Spirit Plaza, the Spirit of Detroit, which is now it's been closed off to vehicle traffic between Jefferson and Larned, if I got my streets correct there. It's a pedestrian plaza. There's cornhole games out there. There's planters, places to sit and have lunch, et cetera. What was the thinking behind that? And whenever on Daily Detroit, we're big backers of increasing pedestrian activity and public transportation and everything. But there's always a pushback about, I don't understand why we're making it harder to drive, especially when more and more people are coming to downtown and moving in and everything. I mean, what's the thinking behind pedestrian plazas and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it gets back to a little bit of what we were talking about earlier in my comment about a city that was built for 2 million and the infrastructure to support 2 million versus a city that now has 700,000 residents and granted an increasing level of business and visitors, but still a different sort of focus in the way that we're interacting with that. We at the partnership, we spend a lot of time planning, and part of our planning looks at how do we drive to destinations as opposed to through destinations. And this is a great example of a section of roadbed that, quite frankly, was more about getting through something than it was getting to anything. If you think about that section, there really is no place to stop. There's no place to park. There's no place, there's destinations. Obviously, mm-hmm. There's the city hall and there's an office building on the other side. But the reality is, this was an opportunity to do two things. One, really think about, do we need – and this is a pilot. It's a 90-day pilot. And so, we and the city have fully recognized that if it doesn't work, we're going to fess up and say it didn't work. But the reality is we're giving it, the good old college try to see if it does work. And so we've closed it off, and what actually is happening is the circulation on Jefferson, which is probably the most challenging because you've got a tunnel that feeds into Jefferson, you've got two expressways on either end, you've got expressways that are coming in at I think they're supposed to be 55, but we all drive 70.
You've got that huge Blade Runner-esque video monitor on Cobo as you're
going through the tunnel. Yep. So you got all this feeding into this little section of Jefferson. And so part of it was if you can make that people flow through Jefferson more efficiently and not have all of the stop and turn and ability to sort of hold traffic up, you know, it might work actually better. And that's what we're actually finding. It also, quite frankly, I think at this – in this – you know, we're at the 50th anniversary of you know, the 67, you know, sort of, you know, the just whether you call it, you know, uprising, you know, riots, whatever you want to call it. The fact is we are at a point in this community where we finally can engage in really, you know, logical and rational discussions about, you know, where we have how far we have come. And we needed a place, that speaker's corner. We needed that civic space for people to congregate. And what better place than to do it in front of City Hall, in front of a 60-year-old Frederick's Marshall Frederick sculpture that, you know, really represents the spirit of Detroit and is the iconic image of this, of Detroit. And so it was a little bit of both. This was a partnership with Bloomberg Associates. Mm-hmm. And they have done this effectively throughout New York. We need to balance a city that's in transition with a city that is really already extremely dense. And mm-hmm. so we're testing, you know, what works there in New York, in Manhattan may not necessarily be exactly what works here. But in general, we want to make sure that we're constantly exploring different things and not just accepting the norm. Mm-hmm. Detroit has accepted the norm for a long time, quite frankly. We needed to. We were in a position where we couldn't be very choosy because we didn't have much option, and we need to.
I sometimes think that Detroit, because of you know conditions downtown and everything, I feel like a lot of people in this region sort of forgot what a city is like for a long time, and we're only now sort of starting to remember it or rediscover it in a sense.
Yeah, and you get spoiled. You know? You get spoiled, you know, being able to drive and park and turn and, you know, do whatever you want. And the reality is, you know, as we grow up and as we, you know, become more progressive and quite frankly more resilient, you know, we need to evolve.
Yeah. Okay. Bikes. Let's talk about biking. You mentioned the perception survey data point that only 31% of respondents said they felt safe riding a bicycle in downtown Detroit. Again, this was before MoGo launched too, so there have been only more bikes added to the mix since that time. But what's DDP doing? I know you guys got some big things up your sleeve.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking about that because we have been. I mean, we've been you know beating that drum about the fact that we need to make sure that this is not only a bike and pedestrian friendly environment, but that people feel safe. And the reality is, we've got an opportunity similar to the conversation we were just having about, you know, closing streets and trying some things. We've got an opportunity to start rebuilding our infrastructure in a way that is actually much more, you know, safe and quite mm-hmm. frankly, much more inviting and conducive to various mobilities. And so, we've just gotten a grant from the Erb Family Foundation. Mm-hmm. It is a very important
$250,000.
Very important for us to be able to demonstrate how you can create not only sustainable in the green infrastructure world, which is becoming increasingly important, especially mm-hmm. in Detroit, as the water department tries to understand how it deals with additional capacity of runoff and how do you, you know, who pays for that and, you know, how do we try and reduce the amount of water runoff and all that. Mm-hmm. And there are real economic impact implications as well as environmental implications to that. But also, how do we create bike lanes that aren't just painted on the street, that we actually are creating zones that are separated from the vehicle traffic.
Protected bike lanes, yeah.
Yeah, and are those, you know, raised? And so we have spent a significant amount of time, and this grant will allow us to implement some very, very good examples of the best practices in protected bike lanes in Capitol Park. And that, we hope, and the intent of the Erb family's partnership with us is to, again, similar to the Q line, it's not going to be, you know, all of the bike lanes that we need in order to link all of the activity, but it will be a great demonstration. People will start to react and respond. This is a community that is absorbing, you know, very quickly what a lot of other cities have taken for granted. And, you know, we need to very quickly demonstrate and have, you know, success in what, quite frankly, a lot of other places around the world have already just sort of for granted. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what this is.
So the pilot program, as you mentioned, is in Capitol Park. But all the same, I think you guys have a plan, a much more comprehensive plan to install these protected bike lanes throughout the downtown.
We do. And actually, we've had a plan for expansion of protected bike lanes throughout the downtown. And if you sort of watch our logic, all of this sort of fits together. So we've been working on the bike lanes and working with our neighboring partners with bike lanes. I mean, Sue Mosey in Midtown has been doing the same thing, and we're making sure that as she comes down south on Cass, we're then picking up, and continuing, and vice versa. But that, we've been doing this in advance of launches like MOGO, mm-hmm. and the recognition that many more people have their own personal bikes on the road. And so, yes, we have a much more extensive program to provide bike lanes and greenways throughout, the downtown and the greater downtown and link up with those other organizations and other installations. But I also think that, we've got to get away from thinking that, everybody has to drive and park in the building in which they live or work. There are incredible opportunities to really be much more innovative and, quite frankly, responsible as we move forward here. And quite frankly, a lot of the people that now are starting to think about Detroit and are excited about Detroit, are recognizing that and requiring that. The other piece is the mayor's office has really staffed up. Mark DeLaverne is now the mobility officer in this mayor's office, came from, Chicago and understands, mm-hmm. What cities in transition really require. And so we now have a partner. Before, DDP really was doing most of this heavy lifting on its own. We now have a really logical and rational and, quite frankly, educated partner that we're working with at the city, which is great.
Yeah, that's awesome. MOGO, we haven't touched on – I mean, we've
touched
mentioned on
right.
MOGO a little bit. But, I mean, how's the – that's a core DDP function. How's it going so far? It did launch just this spring.
Unbelievable. Have you ridden?
I have, yeah. I was there at the launch thing at Henry Ford.
Oh, great. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have right now a little competition, Mighty Mogoers, and we're really trying to encourage people to compete against each other and not only compete in terms of the number of times that they're using the system, but also all of the stations visiting. We actually had one person visit almost every station in a 24-hour period as part wow. of this competition, which is pretty impressive.
The Mighty MOGO.
A little crazy, but but no, MOGO has we brought in and hired Shift Transit, which mm-hmm. has done a lot of these systems around the country, and Shift Transit had expectations of the launch that we have exceeded, by three times. So what that says to me is this is, a community that is just has so much pent-up demand for what so many other communities take for granted. And if we don't, as the Downtown Partnership, if we don't continue to deliver, we've got an insatiable appetite for what we're creating and what we're delivering. But two, we will end up, it's one thing to be the underdog and people sort of, will rally around you for a period of time. We won't have that forever. I mean, we've now gotten far enough outside of the bankruptcy. We now have enough stability and sustainability, and people are feeling good enough about the city that woe is me kind of, of support and sympathy we got is going to transition to, I expect this. I'm living here. I'm investing here. I expect this. And so DDP is absolutely dead set on making sure that we're continuing to deliver on those. And MOGO is a perfect example where clearly we thought there was a demand, we thought there was an interest, and that demand and interest far exceeded anything that we thought, and it's been incredibly successful. So we have the intentions to expand the system, which will almost double it next year.
Mm.
Henry Ford Health Systems and HAP have been an incredible sponsor and, quite frankly, a very fitting sponsor for this kind of physical activity. But the thing that is most rewarding is, you see, I was, I don't know whether you were down during the fireworks, but, I I couldn't walk a block in downtown Detroit without seeing five or six people on MOGO. During the day, there's a MOGO station directly outside my window, and I love watching it be full in the morning, gets emptied out, they refill it, empties out. I mean, there is a real use of this system that is not just for pleasure, but is really making it easier for people to get around the city.
Yeah, Jeremiah over there says that last night he escorted some MOGO riders who were in town from California and needed a little help with direction finding around town. So that's
Jeremiah. That was very nice of you. We had Jimmy Johnson on riding around. Now he had it.
Jimmy Johnson,
the race car driver.
Oh,
I think it was last night. He had his own bike. I think he's like a biker, but he was flanked with all the MOGO riders. It was really cool. Funny. They were racing him.
All right. So before we wrap up, I mean, you know, when you think about downtown, there's new population moving in. There's been huge investment in rehabilitating these buildings to convert them to especially residential uses, which is really, historically speaking, kind of a new use for downtown Detroit. I mean, even in its heyday, wasn't really much of a residential neighborhood. But that's really exciting. I mean, you've got Dan Gilbert, of course, wants to build this huge new tower on the old Hudson site. I mean, where's downtown going in the next, like, say, 5 years? Like, put look into your crystal ball, and I mean, what's it going to look like?
A lot of new buildings going up.
Do you think?
I think we're finally at a point where we've tipped the scale, and we now are going to see new buildings. We had incredible opportunity with the architecture and the building stock that we had, and quite frankly, whenever a city transitions, it has to use the existing building stock first because most of it is often historic, and there are all kinds of tax programs and subsidies that help promote that redevelopment of product before a market can really support ground up new construction.
Sure, yeah.
And so we finally have turned that corner. And so I think 5 years from now, I think one, we're going to see a city that has really a number of different forms of mobility. I really truly believe the autonomous vehicle and buses, more importantly, are going to be much more prevalent. And the city has an ability, unlike so many others, because we are a city in transition, to lean into that kind of stuff and really deploy it on the streets of Detroit. And I think you'll see that. I think you'll see a skyline that is finally changed. We've had the same skyline for the last 25 years. There hasn't been anything new. And to your point, Bedrock and the Gilbert organization already has designs on not only infill development ground up, but of scale, of height. And so I think we're going to see some verticality to the building that has traditionally been more horizontal in the downtown. And then I also think that what you'll see is a densification. I have said for a long time that I think that the arena project and the district is probably the most impactful and most important infill project the city could have had, because it immediately filled a gap between Midtown, which was already experiencing a lot of natural and organic vibrancy, and the downtown that was really turning a corner. But we had this no man's land in between, and that project has instantaneously filled that and brought a level of activity. And again, it's one piece of a number of different things. But I think in 5 years you'll see continued expansion of the public spaces. You'll see lots more people living downtown. We just finished a Zimmerman Volk residential study that continues to show significant residential demand over the next 5 years. We from 1990 to 2000, we had zero residential units delivered in downtown. From 2000 to 2010, we had 700 delivered. We have over 1,000 a year now, either in construction or planned, in the core downtown. And so I think you'll see a lot more people on the street. I think you'll see a lot more 24/7 activities. And I think we'll see some really interesting architecture, which, quite frankly, a city that was founded on good architecture deserves.
That's Eric Larson. He's the CEO of the Downtown Detroit Partnership, and he's also a real estate guy by day.
Doing the Tiger Stadium. I'm getting excited. So Old Tiger Stadium in Corktown is a development that I was fortunate enough to win a RFP on that the city put out 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's been a long haul.
But I saw the girders up on the way
over
here.
Yeah, and that's PAL. So Police Athletic League is doing their headquarters, and, okay. and that's their project. And they will be activating the field with youth sports, and it's going to be – really is going to be neat, because what ultimately happens is it's going to be a mix of destination youth sports and you know, sort of more community activities with commercial development, so 110 residential units above about 30,000 square feet of retail, and then some single-family townhomes that will be for sale. And so the entire site will be transformed. We've trademarked the corner because it is the most famous corner, not only in the city, but quite frankly, in many sports fanatics' minds. And so the corner at Trumbull and Michigan and Trumbull will be redeveloped as part of this entire transformation of the city.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to watching that take shape. Eric Larson, the CEO of the Downtown Detroit Partnership. Thanks so much, Eric, for joining us
today. Thanks for doing what you do.
On the Happy Hour podcast. Yeah, absolutely. And we look forward to watching.
Next time we have to have something to drink. We're in a drunk tank and you call it the Happy Hour podcast. I mean, come on.
Well, it's 8:30 in the morning. I mean, we would have brought something.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
But you probably got to go to work. I mean, believe me, I said this to Jeremiah last night. I feel like we should bring a bottle or something.
I know. Had I known this was, that I was the virgin, I would have brought a bottle to Christmas. I just didn't want it hit over my head.
But there goes the day if we go that
route. That's true.
It's early in the morning, which is, it's our first podcast cut here in the drunk tank, which I think you ought to give serious consideration to calling this studio that. But it's also our first time recording first thing in the morning like this. So it's a,
it's a first all over.
It's a series of firsts here on the Daily Detroit Happy Hour podcast. All right, listeners, before we let you go, just a quick pitch to consider becoming a member and supporting the Daily Detroit Happy Hour podcast. For $5 a month, you can support this podcast and all the great content that you read on dailydetroit.com. In exchange, we'll send you a beautiful T-shirt with the Daily Detroit crest on it. Go to dailydetroit.com, click the membership tab at the top of the page to learn more. And we'd like to give our customary round of thanks to Dave and Bob, the Podcast Detroit people. Thanks so much for what you do and all your support.
Appreciate it.
Nice job on the new studio here. Maybe next time you run a vacuum or something.
You're a week early. What do you want from me? We don't have the fridge in yet. We don't have the kegerator in yet. We don't have... Yeah. It's a week before we're ready to go.
All right. Well, it's only going to get better.
But for
folks.
You guys, we open the doors.
So it's really only going to get better. Thanks a lot, everyone, for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show today. Until we connect next time, be well, do good work, and take care of one another. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.